Be continuing our study in the Gospels here. We're continuing our, last week we started off, two weeks ago, we started off in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, and that's where we'll be at this morning. And last week we focused on verses 17 through 19, talking about just the law. You know, what was the purpose of the law? How was the law fulfilled? Because in verse 17, Jesus says, you know, don't think that I've come to destroy the law. That's interesting. He didn't come to destroy it, right? A lot of people, again, the Jews, they had this mentality that when the Messiah came, that Jesus was going to come take over everything. All the Jews were going to basically rule the world, and everything was going to be a lot better than their current situation, right? So when Jesus came and said, I'm not coming to destroy the law, I'm not coming to really change very much, if you will, of the past life and change your situations, he says, but I've come to fulfill it. Right now, that was kind of perplexing to some people. Like, what do you mean, fulfill the law? How does that even work? Right? And we talked last week about the purpose of the law was to show us that we're guilty, to show us that we can't live up to the set of rules, if you will, that God put forth. Right? Ten Commandments, and then, of course, hundreds of others were added on later in the book of Leviticus. And again, what was the purpose? To show us that we can't live up to it. Right? To show us that we fall short. Not just one time in our life, but we continually fall short. Right? That's what Jesus, the point was, and that's the point that Paul makes in the book of Romans, right? And then, of course, then in verse 19, we talk about how did Jesus fulfill the law? You know, well, he came to die on the cross for us. It took the death of a perfect being, the death of a perfect eternal being, if you will, the Son of God, to come and die for us to erase our sin, if you will, to cover our sins. That's probably a better way to put it, right? So if we go out there and we get a speeding ticket, you know, and we get caught, we get a speeding ticket, they say, show up to court. You know, you got to pay this much money. You know, you show up there and goodness, you pay your money. You know, sometimes those speeding tickets aren't cheap, right? And so you pay your money. Well, what if somebody stands up and says, well, I'll pay your ticket for you, right? Or the judge forgives you. That's another one. You know, that's kind of a shocking thing in a sense. And that's just one offense, right? That's just talking about one offense, right? But Jesus came and he says, you know what? I'll take the payment, if you will. I'll pay for all your sins. Every sin that not only you've committed, but everybody in the world. Everybody. Right, because salvation is offered to all. I'll make the sacrifice for every person. And I will pay for every single one. Right, and nobody can do that except the Son of God. No one else was capable of doing that. And one thing we do understand is that Jesus wasn't forced to it. Right, Jesus was not forced. He could have. Even Satan talks about it. You know, the angels could come down at any second and spare you from any kind of discomfort. You know, and the Bible talks about how it was the love of Christ, if you will, that kept it back and kept him on track. His love for us to keep him on track to go to the cross and die for us and pay for all our sins. I can't imagine having to pay for everybody's speeding ticket, you know, and even just in this room for y'all, those of y'all that have that speeding ticket, right? I can't imagine having to do that just one time, but imagine doing it for goodness, thousands of billions upon, you know, an innumerable amount of offenses. I'd have to come pay for that. So that's what Jesus did. That's how he fulfilled the law, right? So that brings us on to verse 20. And then now, in speaking about the law and talking about the context, if you will, Jesus said, I've not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill it. And then he says in verse 20, and we'll continue on here. Before we go any further, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I pray that you'll bless our hearts. Lord, bless my speaking. Lord, I pray that we'll speak to people. Lord, I pray that they'll hear your words, Father, and not mine. Give them understanding, Lord, and just a heart and a hunger, Lord, for the things we're going to hear this morning. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so continuing in that context of the law, talking about the law, that we all fall short of it, we go look in verse 20, and it says, For I say unto you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. So what is Jesus saying here? Is he saying that there's a way that if my righteousness exceeded the scribes and Pharisees, is Jesus saying that there's a way that I could make it into heaven based off my good works? Is that what Jesus is trying to say? One of the things that we have to understand is the scribes and the Pharisees were the most righteous, you want to call it, righteous people of their time. They were lifted up. They were put on pedestals because of their righteousness, by works, if you will. They always did, if you will, the proper thing. They did it, right? It wasn't in their heart, but they did it. They did the proper thing all the time. They were so holy that whenever they said anything, people would listen, right? If they said, if they gave any kind of different interpretation of the scripture, then so-and-so, a lot of times they'd be listened to, right? Some people even started following different scribes and different Pharisees because they liked their teaching better than another, Right? So then we started getting different interpretations of the law. Now, they weren't all completely different because we still had the law. We still had they still had the rules that they followed. But they were starting to get different people that they followed. One of the Pharisees is Gamaliel is one of the Pharisees that many followed in the Bible. You know, his name is even mentioned that he was actually one of the more proper Pharisees when it came to the new covenant that Jesus Christ brought, right? But of course, that was just one of them out of many. So the Pharisees were considered the most holy of the holy, if you will, of mankind. And they followed them all. They followed every single law that you could imagine. And even if they ever broke a law, guess what they would do? They would like change their clothes and wash their hands and do all this penance, if you will, because they broke a law or might have thought they broke some kind of law, right? These were the holiest of the holy. Nobody could surpass them. That's what Jesus was talking about. But then Jesus said, if you wanted to get into heaven, your righteousness has to exceed, right? The righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees. Now, exceed doesn't just mean you have to better them by well. You have to one up the Pharisees and the scribes. That's not what it means, right? Exceed does not mean just do one or two better or three better. If you want to put it in numbers, exceed means to far surpass, right? The righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, which wasn't going to happen, right? The people would give up their lives, if you will, just to become a scribe or a Pharisee, and they had to almost be born into it. Right? So to exceed, to far surpass the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, it was just not going to happen. That was something that was unfathomable and actually a bit insulting, if you will, to the Jewish people and especially the scribes and the Pharisees. Basically telling them what you do is not good enough. Nobody likes to hear that. Goodness, especially achievers. They don't like to hear that what they're doing is not good enough. That just one of two things can happen. It can, you know, kill their motivation or can spur them on to try harder. But nobody likes to hear that they're not doing good enough. Nobody likes that, right? That's why it's important to pat each other on the back every once in a while. Paul tells us repeatedly in his epistles, he says, you know, encourage one another, lift each other up, build each other up, right? He says that's more important than tearing each other down. Well, way more important, right? So everybody wants to be encouraged, but these Pharisees, they're telling right now, all this work that you're doing, all this effort that you're putting forth to be righteous and to be called a Pharisee, to be worthy of that title, it's not worth anything. You're spinning your wheels. It's not going to get you anywhere. And of course, they didn't like it, right? So how did they fail in the law, right? If they were doing their best, because every year they would make sacrifices to atone for the things that they fell short of, right? That's how they erased their past sins. But if they were still falling short of the law, how were they falling short of the law? They could have looked at it and said, you know what? I'm following this to the letter, right? I'm following it to the letter. How am I falling short, Jesus? You know, what's the deal here? Let's look at verse 21. He's going to start breaking it down, how they're falling short of the law, but not only how they're not attaining the righteousness they need to attain, but how also their interpretation is backwards. It's messed up, right? They're not following it how they should. Right now here it says in verse 21, it says, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, right? Thou shalt not kill, one of the Ten Commandments. And whoever murders will be in danger of judgment. Right? Of course, that's common sense. Right? If you ever have read through the Old Testament, and you probably heard that old saying, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Right? This saying even applied to oxen and cows. And if you had a cow get loose and it ran over somebody and killed them, guess what? There's a punishment for that. You better put that cow to death. Right? So there was an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, and not only kill the cow, but to repay the person. If it killed somebody, you got to somehow repay their their prosperity, if you will. Whatever their prosperity was going to be in their lifetime, you had to go through and repay, if not all of it, at least a portion of it to the family. So there were some really strict guidelines here, you know, about murder, and that's how they understood it. But what does Jesus say? Jesus says in verse 22, he says, "But I say," right? So who? "But I say," Jesus said, I was there when these commandments were written. I know what the intent was." Right now, let me. Put this in context, right? So as time goes by, language changes. Language and intent will change with time, right? And generally will degrade. It degrades over time. It doesn't get better. Some people like to say that, well, we're more intelligent now. In some cases we are, I could say, in some senses. But when it comes to individual intelligence, many scientists will put forth studies and say that we're actually, our intellectual capabilities and faculties are actually lowering. You know, why is that? Because we have so many things that do things for us. I remember when I was taught in high school how to read a map, right? And even in the military, they taught us even more about contour lines and all these different things, declination angles and things like that when it comes to reading a map and being able to navigate. Well, what do we got now? I remember when in the military, when I was close to close to the end of my time, they started bringing in GPSs. And a lot of those old purists, man, they start saying, what are you using GPSs for? Don't you know how to navigate with just a map and a protractor and all that stuff? You know, you're making yourselves weaker, the old timers would say. And on one hand, that was true. Yes, their job might be more efficient, but guess what? The necessary brain power to complete the same task was made easier, right? And that's just one aspect, but that happens all the time now, right? Even me today, I have a hard time getting places if I don't have it on my GPS. Right? Used to, I'd be able to remember all kinds of directions. You know, go 2 miles from, somebody could tell me how to drive 100 miles. You know, go down this road and different things to watch for. And I remember I used to be able to remember all those things all the time. Man, I remember how to, especially, this popped in my head, I'll go ahead and say it. But especially if I was going to pick up a date. Man, this is how to get to my house. I did not forget how to get to that house, I tell you. I remembered how to get there, right? I was on time. I was even a little early. I did not forget it. Even if it was dark outside, I'd somehow see everything that I needed to see. But, you know, the necessary brain power to do even the simplest things. I remember my grandma, good night, she used to have all these recipes in her mind that she could cook anything you could think of. Right, and even if she didn't know how to cook it, she would. Her understanding of cooking and baking in general, how sugar and salt, sugar and salt don't go together, but how sugar and y'all know what I'm talking about, how all these things go together. Right, I'm way out of my league on here, but how to put things together in order to make things taste well. They understood how to utilize salt and sugar and how to put it all together. Right, but as we go, the further we go on in time, goodness, we got recipe books, and I'm not saying that's bad. But, you know, and then even on your phones here, right? On your phones right there, pull up a recipe. How do I make this? The necessary brain power to do just even the more simple task, it's getting lower, right? Our brains are being exercised less. So in that sense, that's what I'm talking about. Our intellectual capabilities, they're actually getting lower. Now, are we getting smarter? Yeah, right? We're getting smarter. There's more things that we know. But as far as being able to operate, if you will, brain power-wise, it's actually getting lower. So that's how that things degrade over time, right? Another thing we can say, sin degrades things. And I think, I can't remember if I've used this example before, and please don't take offense to this. I am not judging. Y'all do what you want to do. I am not judging, okay? Please understand that right from the get-go. But I'm just going to use this as an example, okay? So if we went back 100 years, right, and we took the modern-day bikini, right, and put it on someone on a beach 100 years ago, what do you think would happen? Crazy House would be there to pick somebody up. That's just what would happen, right? But now we fast forward, and the reason I say that is because the way things change and the way what used to be considered modesty 100 years ago has completely changed to what is considered modest now, right? You go out, it's common thing now, right? And again, I'm not judging. Y'all do what you want to do. I'm not. But if you ask my opinion, right, personally, I will tell you. But at the same time, don't think I'm judging. That's the point. But the point that I did want to make is that things change over time. Modesty 100 years ago was way different than what modesty is now. Goodness, 100 years ago, so many people didn't even think you should be wearing pants, showing your ankles, for goodness sakes, right? Oh, my goodness, you'd be kicked out of church and all kinds of things would happen, right? But just the way things change, the way... some people will say degrade. Some people will say, I don't know, whatever you want to say. Some people call it freedoms, you know. But at the same time, the reason I bring that up is because the same thing would happen here with the law, right? Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years have passed since the law was given, right? The intent and their interpretation started to change. So what Jesus is saying, this is what I said. This is what was back in the beginning. This is what the initial intent of thou shalt not kill was, right? So Jesus is going to explain it to him here. All right, so let's get back to it. Verse 22, it says, but Jesus says, but I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of judgment. Jesus is saying, guess what? If you're angry with your brother, you're getting close to being judged at the level that a murderer would be judged at. All right, that's a pretty serious thing. Jesus is clarifying what the intent was. Without cause to be in danger of judgment, whosoever says to his brother Raca shall be in danger of counsel, and whoever says you fool shall be in danger of hell fire. So Jesus, you know, the Pharisees, one of the things the Pharisees used to teach was, as long as you don't murder anybody, right, you're doing okay, right? Just don't go murder anybody. You can treat, they probably didn't say this out forthright, but in a general sense, they were telling people, as long as you're not murderous to your fellow man, and as long as you just kind of coexist, right, everything is going to be okay. But what Jesus says here, he brings it all the way back, right? He says, if you're angry with your brother without cause, you're getting close to this judgment. And then he clarifies, he gets even more specific. And this is a point, this is something that needs clarifying, because nobody knows what raca means. I remember, I've been told it many times and I still forget. I had to go back and look it up. All right, so let's look again in verse 22. It says, "And whoever says to his brother, raca, shall be in danger of counsel, but whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." Man, you don't want to call, I've called somebody a fool before. Good night. I don't want to be in danger of hellfire, but let's see what this is actually talking about. So when it comes to raca, right, what is that? That is, it's a disrespect. It's an insult to somebody, obviously, right? But when I think of insult, I think of the other day when we were scooping, yesterday we were scooping some stew into the cups out there, and they were, you know, the guys were jabbing at each other. You know, somebody can say, we were throwing insults back and forth and, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, it's, you know, all in good fun. But was that actually, by definition, an insult? No, because we might use it that way, but by definition, an insult is something very heavy, right? Just, again, talking about the way intents can change, but we're using the same words. Can it still be used in that context? Kind of, right? But the intent wasn't really there. At least I hope it wasn't, guys. Goodness, right? The intent wasn't really there. Now, what's an insult? An insult is complete disrespect or scornful abuse. That's what, by definition, what an insult is. It's something very heavy. If I said I insulted somebody and I go back and look at the definition, I might have disrespected them, but go as far to say that I scornfully abused somebody, I don't know that I look at anybody scornfully with just complete disdain and almost hatred, right? That's kind of where, when you say something to somebody and it comes from that heart, if you will, that's when it's really an insult, right? Just jabbing at each other, I guess you could play and say it's an insult, but it's not really. An insult is actually, by definition, a pretty serious thing. Right, so it says, if we throw an insult at somebody, that's what raca is, it's an insult. If we carry raca against somebody, that's insulting somebody's intelligence, right? Insulting someone's intelligence. And that's not just going up and saying, you dumped the rice all over the table and you called him something, you know, that was a dumb thing to do, right? You know, what did you do that for? Now that didn't make any kind of sense. You know, what's wrong with you? You start to insult their capabilities and their intelligence and their action. That's getting close to it, but it's not really going that as far as what we're talking about. All right, we take that definition of insult, right? Something that's scornful, something that's abusive, something that's completely disrespectful, and then you insult somebody's intelligence, all right? That's just basically saying you have no ability to be smarter than what you are. That's kind of what raca is. Insulting someone's intelligence, saying that their intelligence is never going to amount to anything. You're where you're at, you're never going to get any better. Right? That's completely tearing somebody down. That's what raca means, right? Insulting somebody's intelligence. He says, if you say that to somebody, right, and you believe that in your heart when you say it, you're going to be in danger of counsel. That means you better, you know, the elders are going to come together and they're going to set you straight. Right? That's kind of what it means. It says, they shall be in danger of counsel, but whoever says you fool shall be in danger of hellfire. Now that goes a little bit further, because now we're not just insulting somebody's intelligence. Now you're insulting someone's character, right? Their backbone, what they're made of, right? How many men out there like to be told that they're not a man? I tell you what, that's a hard one for me to swallow. If somebody said it, it'd be hard. That really gets me, right? Why? Because I look back on my life personally, right? And everybody has to measure themselves. But I look back on my life and I say, you know what? I think I've done things worthy to be called a man, personally. I think so. So when somebody comes up to me and say, you're not a man, you better grow up, man, that gets me. I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, that's a pretty big insult to me, right? But that's kind of somewhat what this is talking about here. You call somebody a fool, you're insulting their character, right? The character, who they are, what they're made of, how they were brought up, right? Because socialization is a huge part of how somebody ends up when they grow up. It's not the end all be all, but it is a huge part. Right? There are certain things about my life that I don't like to do in front of others, especially because of things I've heard when I was a kid. And I try to rationalize that. I try to reason it out and say, why does this affect me so much now as an adult? I can't rationalize it out. But for some reason or other, the way it affected me as a kid, it still carries on even today. And that's what I'm talking about. There's some things about socialization that are really hard to get rid of. Right? They're really hard to get rid of some. But there's other things that do end up changing, you know, as you grow up. But you start insulting somebody's upbringing. You start insulting their character. You start insulting what they're made of and who they've become. That's what it's saying here, this you fool. And I had to really, you got to really dig into the definitions here to see what it's really talking about. Because English is a very, very narrow language, if I can put it that way, right? Greek and Hebrew is very broad. And the reason I say that is because, it's really broad. That's almost a whole lesson in and of itself. Hebrew, before there was actually letters to Hebrew, they would draw pictures to describe the word that they were saying. And I think I've said this before, one of the pictographs, if you will, that described a wife was a watchtower, sand and water. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing, or dirt and water, right? So if you would say, how in the world would you describe a wife as a watchtower, as sand, and also as water, right? Because of the way the language is, it was so broad, they would say, wife, we look at wife, and I think that's just somebody I married, right? That's somebody I married, and there's more to it than that, of course. But the way the Hebrews would look at it, they would say a wife is somebody that's a watchtower for her family, right? Men, I don't know if you men have ever experienced this, but there's been times in the past when my wife would say something like, I don't think that's a good idea. And I've been like, yeah, whatever, you know, I'm going to keep on going here. Yeah, lo and behold, a couple weeks later, I find out that wasn't really a good idea. How did she know it wasn't a good idea? I don't know. I personally think that there's something special about that God gives women some intuition of some kind that really, there's wisdom there. I see some men trying to ignore it, looking away. I'm serious. I've heard this. I've heard preachers tell me this 100 times, especially when I was coming into ministry. They would always say things like, pay attention to the things your wife says. And they would use that same example. You know what? There's something about them that God gives them something special, that there's wisdom in what they say. Right? So I've learned that. Right? How in the world did I start talking about that? I don't know. Let's look for somebody to blame real quick. I don't got nobody to blame. But anyway, you know, we're talking about someone's character. We're talking about, that bugs me. I hate when I do that. Oh, talking about someone's character. Oh, well, okay. Lord, if it's important, Lord will bring it back. I'm sorry. So we'll continue our full. Don't insult someone's character, right? Don't insult what they're doing. Don't insult who they are, their upbringing. That's what it's talking about when it says you fool. Don't do that. You know, that you're in danger of hellfire because you're insulting, in essence, what we talk about, we put this in the bulletin sometimes, that we are fearfully and wonderfully made, right? Guess what? When we call somebody a fool, we are insulting what God has made people into. You might say, well, that person's got small feet or big feet, and you got crooked eyes, I don't know. You can go all funny with these goofy insults, right? But you got to understand that God made people how they are. And we have to look at that, and we have to appreciate it, and we have to celebrate it. Because I don't care who you are, God didn't make any kind of weird mistakes when he made you. There's no mistake. Somebody will say, well, that person over there is defective, or he has problems. You know, guess what? That kind of thing was set in that person's life in order to make them more Christ-like. You know, so don't mess with God's process. That's Romans 8:29. Everybody has the problems that they have, so we become more Christ-like. And we start insulting the difficulties that God has placed in somebody's life. We start insulting the plan of God. It just grows from there. So now we have to understand why the Bible says, and when it says, don't call somebody a fool, right, by the definition that I gave, because then you're in danger of hellfire. You're getting really close to blaspheming the Lord and his work and his plan, right? So that don't call somebody a fool. Don't insult their character. Don't insult who they are. That's what the Bible is saying. All right, so continuing on here, therefore, verse 23, if you bring a gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you. So we just talked about don't insult your brother. Don't do these things, right? If something happened, if there was a disagreement in the past and you need to get it right, don't even give your tithes and offerings is what Jesus is saying here. He says, therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, remember that your brother has something against you. Leave your gift before the altar and go your way. First, be reconciled, right? Unity is more important than your tithes and offerings and giving. That's what Jesus is saying. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Verse 25 says, agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. You know what? They used to tell us as a kid, you know, act like an adult when it comes to solving your problems. You know, kids will start slapping each other and fighting. My kids do this a lot. They're slapping each other and fighting, and, you know, I try to tell them, especially Roddy, and Nathan, when they fight, because they're getting to the age, you got to start learning how to fix things with your words. There's no reason to go off and haul off and throw something at each other, and you know how kids are. There's no reason for that. And one's crying, and you know what's wrong with toning it down a bit, and I'm trying to teach them that now, and just, you know, talk about it. You know, he's not sharing. Y'all have heard the way kids fight, right? But that's what it's talking. They used to tell us that in school. Well, just act like an adult. Fix your problems like an adult. And that's what the Bible's telling us here. If you have done something wrong to somebody, fix it between you two. Right? If there was a car accident, there's a lot you can do before the police officer gets there. You can go ahead and exchange information. You can go ahead and make a gentleman's agreement, if you will, that you're gonna do right by one another. Don't worry about it. It was my fault. Go ahead and admit whose fault it was. You know, that kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about. Go ahead and make things peaceful. When we first came back from Peru in 2013, I just came back into town, and down in Peru, you only really drive like 25 to 35 miles an hour because of the way the cities were, and that was fast. That felt really fast if you were used to driving really slow. And the cities were packed, you know, where we were at, and drive, you just had to drive really slow. So when I came back here to the States, the first time I got on the highway, it was scary, and I was going slow. I was going like 55, and I just felt like everything was flying at me. It was crazy. So just about a week or so after that, I was driving through a part of town that I wasn't familiar with, and I ran a red light. And I was trying to look both ways at the same time and drive straight and pay attention to the the signals, and it was stressing me out. But I ran a red light, smashed into this guy's car, totaled his car, and thankfully he didn't, he was merciful to me, thankfully. But he was the judge, one of the judges in town, the appellate court. Man, I just totaled this guy's car. The first thing he said to me when I got out and helped him out of his car was, "My wife's going to kill you," because this was her favorite car, and it was an old car too. And but he says, "But you've helped me out because I get to get her a new car now and quit driving this old thing," he said. But anyway, and this guy had broke some of his ribs. I felt horrible. But what were my actions? I felt like get out, make it right, apologize, admit whose fault it was. Do what you can to create peace in that situation. Right? That guy was my adversary, possibly, because I hit him, obviously. But the cop showed up, and he says, he started asking people that were standing around for witnesses, and he came and talked to me before he talked to the witnesses, and he asked us, what happened? I told him the whole thing. It was my fault. I ran a red light. I told him everything. And he says, "Well, I guess there's not really much else to do." So he didn't need anything else, really. But that made the whole situation 10 times simpler. Right, the ambulance person that was seeing to the old man when they came, she even said, "Thanks for making the situation more simple." She said, "You'd be surprised, and you all know this, how sometimes they'll start blaming one another, and it just goes crazy, right?" But went in there and tried to make peace and all that. Well, I go to court, get my ticket. It was good night. It was like $600, obviously. I ran a red light, totaled the guy's car. Guess what? I get there, and this guy that I just completely destroyed his car, he said, "Don't worry about it." He was the judge. And of course, he can't be a judge on his own case, so he had another judge stand in. Guess what this guy said? "Don't worry about it. Erase it off his record." I didn't get in trouble one bit for that, right? And I didn't pay nothing. But at the same time, that's the kind of thing that can happen. If you try to make peace between you and your adversary or whoever you've wronged or whatever, there's a lot of good that can come from that. Now, don't think that every single time is going to get you out of paying a ticket. It might not. But at the same time, what it does put your heart at rest. It does take that little bit of extra stress off, that there's not something between you and somebody else. Because believe it or not, that's a little bit of extra stress that we all don't need. So Jesus is saying here, he says, agree with your adversary quickly. Right? It's very practical knowledge. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge and the judge hand you over to the officer and you be thrown in prison. And of course, back in those days, you'd be thrown in prison for a lot less than you would today. Right? Because we got our law system nowadays is a lot wider, if you will. There's a lot more resources available to us here in our country, thankfully. But if you go to some place like Peru, where we used to live, and if you run over somebody, let's say you run over somebody, the guy was drunk, stumbled around on the sidewalk, and he fell in front of a car. Guess who's at fault there? The person driving. They will throw you in jail, and there is no, there's no thing saying, like, okay, in a week, the lawyer's going to come and get you out. No, it's whenever the system can get to you. I mean, it's a mess, I'm telling you what. So you hit somebody, it doesn't matter if it was their fault or not. If they ran out in front of a car and they did something silly, that would be the driver's fault. And they will throw you in prison, and they don't know when they'll get to you. Right? So thank the Lord we have the resources we do, if you will, according to the law, to our law. But it says, agree with your adversary. Verse 26 says, "Assuredly I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you have paid the last penny." Right? So what he's saying is, if you don't make things right, if you don't do your best to smooth things over and be an adult about things, the judge is going to go through here and he's going to sift through everything he can find to make things right. That's what a judge does, right? He goes through and he will sift through all kinds of stuff. Anybody ever watched Judge Judy before? Judge Judy is funny because sometimes the situation that is brought before her, a lot of times that story ends up growing. Whatever the story is between the plaintiff and the defendant, it ends up growing like way out of hand sometimes, before the judge. And that's what it's talking about. Sometimes your situation of just being in an argument of she broke my cell phone, I want her to pay it back for me. What ends up coming out in the courts? Goodness, all kinds of other stuff. Well, we've been dating for a while and this and that and all these kinds of things. Right? I mean, it can be turned into a mess. So what Jesus is saying here, that if you don't do your best to try to fix things with an adversary, guess what could happen? right? Is that you can go through and have your entire life exposed out there for everybody to see because you wanted to fight this, right? Because the judge obviously has to do their due diligence to be on the right side to make a proper judgment. So they do their best to take everything into consideration. And many times, it's not just that particular situation, right? There are a lot of other things that can come out there, right? Okay, let me use this example real quick before we close. So what if I was driving there and I ran the red light and I didn't want to agree with my adversary. I didn't want to go in there and try to make things right. I started blaming him. I started lying about everything you can think of, right? And we took it to court. And I said, I'm going to fight this, right? Even though I knew I was in the wrong. I'm going to fight this. So we get to court and the judge starts asking questions. Who ran the red light? You know, so now they have to bring the officers in. What did you observe when this individual ran the red light? You know, in your opinion, of course, in the police report, did he run the red light or was the red light actually green? Who's telling a lie here? You know the kinds of things that the police officers are going to say? Well, was there anything to impair judgment? That's one of the questions, you know, of the driver. Man, imagine if I was drinking or something or smoking marijuana or something that would have impaired or texting on the phone. Man, that would blow things up completely, wouldn't it? Goodness sakes. But what would have been better? Me to take all that through court and all of a sudden the courts find out that I was texting and drinking at the same time and you know what I'm saying, and had a movie going on in the dashboard, you know, all these different things that impaired my judgment. Oh, you can imagine the fee would be much, much higher. They might have even taken my license for a while. But just in that instance, and I'm not saying to sweep evil under the rug or wrongdoing under the rug, but my point is when you do agree with an adversary, you avoid a lot of problems. You avoid a lot of stress. You get things out of the way, and you make peace quickly. You know, that's kind of the point there, right, what Jesus is saying. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there till you have paid the last penny, right? So that's the point. You know, you want to have your whole life sifted through. You just want to make things right, you know, right away. That's what Jesus is saying. We'll go ahead and close there. Next week, I thought about continuing on this morning, but next week we're getting to a much bigger subject, right, when it comes to adultery. This is the thing I'm telling you all now. Some of y'all that you might want to come ready next week because this is a hard one. Next week is going to be a hard one. I'm just kind of preparing you for now. All right. But you got a question, CW?
Hey, 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, you're right. Thank you. Next 2 weeks. We got Pastor Larry coming next week. All right. So you're safe. You get 2 weeks to prepare, and I'll be talking to guys because this is talking to men from this angle, if you will, when it comes to adultery. I can't talk to women about this. I guess I could. But I'm not as comfortable with it. I'm not as knowledgeable about that kind of the woman's side of things and the way a woman's mind works. You know, y'all understand now what I'm talking about. I don't know how a woman's mind works all the time. I know flowers and saying I'm sorry. But, oh my goodness! I was telling me and my wife. I'll tell you this. I'll say sorry, right? And it'll make things better later. But I was telling her something. We got into an argument the other night, and I said, what did I say? I said something like, it's my fault anyway, you know, it's okay, you know, don't worry about it. And she said, well, it's not your fault. Why are you going to lie about it? I said, well, I was like, to be honest with you, I was like, that's kind of a tool that guys use to try to smooth the situation over. I was telling our secrets. I said, it's kind of a tool that guys use just to kind of lessen the tension in the situation because it makes things easier to talk out. But it wasn't true. I said, well, wait a minute. My point was I was trying to lessen tension. That was the point of it. And she got stuck on the, well, it wasn't true. And I was like, but now look, we're talking because I lessened the tension, right? Anyway, oh my goodness. That was funny. So that's a tool that was kind of, it works pretty good. It worked pretty good. I told my secret now, though, so I might not work so good next time. Anyway, I thank you all for being here today. Go ahead and stand to your feet. We'll have a verse of invitation. Start praying for you. I know. I'm getting some dirty looks from the guys now. Telling our secret. Right? I don't know why that works with the woman when they don't know that secret. But it has in the past. But anyway, I'm glad y'all are here today. Pray one for another. I pray that you have a good week. You know, pray one for another. There's some extra prayers out there. Some pretty heavy ones I was hearing yesterday. Pray like I said, pray one for another. That's about it. All right, let's go ahead and sing.